Kia ora and welcome to the C Word Radio, the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts. Hello from lockdown. If you are in Aotearoa, New Zealand, how are you? Not sure? Yeah, me neither. Me neither. I feel like the novelty of lockdown has well and truly worn off for me. And that it feels more serious. I mean, yeah, COVID has always been serious. It's a serious situation. We're in a pandemic. But Delta just seems to take it up a notch. It's the quickness it's spreading is quite frightening. And I'm in Tamaki Makaurau, which means that, you know, there are most of the cases are up here, and I have been keeping up to date with the locations of interest, and there's been quite a few around where we live. So yeah, it's pretty stressful. So if you are not coping either and you're finding it stressful and you've got lots of uneasy emotions going on, you are not alone. I am too. And so I'm sure many other people. So please give yourself a break. You know, for me, lockdown really reminds me of cancer and being on chemo. And that's uncomfortable in itself, that it's bringing up all those old feelings about, you know, going through this experience that I had absolutely no control over. And, you know, that you have this thing that you don't know how it's going to impact you. So give yourself a break. And I feel like I'm probably saying this to myself as well, because I woke up this morning and I just thought, oh man, the world is crazy, because there are a lot of things happening right now, not just here, but overseas. And if you're an empathetic person, or you're just, you know, I mean, we're all impacted, maybe turn the news off, turn off social media, and really go into yourself and ramp up that self-care, ramp up that stuff that's going to really support your spirit and support your well-being. And I'm definitely saying this for myself as well to hear. I need to be told that a lot, because I move between doom scrolling, sleeping and snacking right now. And the scrolling part is probably the worst for me, to be honest. So with that, today's episode really couldn't have come at a more perfect time. And in the coming weeks, the focus of episodes really is going to be around healing and grief and how we face challenges. My guests have some amazing wisdom, so make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you can get the notification when a new episode has been published. My guest today is no stranger to grief. Katie Rossler had just moved to Germany from America when her mother died unexpectedly. She then suffered the first of two miscarriages while she was in the US. These painful experiences taught her incredible lessons about how we grieve. And she learned the power of grief in our lives. Katie is a licensed counselor, and she actually has a book coming out about grief. She says the world is waking up to the grief and struggles they didn't expect to show up all at once. This is Katie's story. Thank you so much for joining me, Katie, from Germany.
Thank you. Thank you, Helen. I'm excited about our chat today and what will come up for your listeners.
Yeah. I would just say before that, reading your website and your bio, I mean, reading it, I felt a lot of connection to some of your experience. And I think a lot of my listeners will as well, when, you know, you have lots of things happen. But where I'd love to start is that you have a book coming out. So tell us all about that. What is it called? When does it come out? What is it about?
Thank you. Yes. It's called The New Face of Grief and Transform Pain into Empowerment. It's going to be coming out October 5th, which actually we'll lead into later and talk about, but is the third anniversary of my mom's death, and felt like a beautiful tribute to her life and the legacy that she's left. And the book is about understanding hidden grief. We link grief to death and major loss, and yet we're all going through grief right now. And So I really draw attention to the need for a new definition of grief, an understanding of how it's a natural, normal part of life. We experience it in a variety of ways, and that it really is a tool for our growth. And so in the book, I describe how that can be and take you through my life experiences, but I also have women from around the world sharing their stories of how grief has impacted them and really how they found a greater purpose or meaning in life because of it, whether it be something small as like richer, small in quotations, richer relationships with those they love, to creating a new job or business or something bigger that impacts more people. So it's a beautiful book that came about in the last year. I started writing it at the beginning of the pandemic. And yeah, so I'm excited to have it come out soon.
I love that. And then, yeah, gosh, where to start? Because I feel like grief is one of those things where it doesn't ever really fully go away. But for me, my experience is that the times between the really painful stuff starts getting a little bit bigger. And I sometimes wonder whether one of our biggest challenges around grief is other people's discomfort with us being in our grief. And so sometimes that can leave us with no spaces to really feel and grieve the things that are going on. What is your definition of grief? And because I know people say there are the stages of grief, but I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think that grief goes through these processes. I'd love to know what your experience of that grieving process is.
My definition I give to grief is an experience we go through when life doesn't go the way that we thought it would. The shoulds. No, it's supposed to go this way. It should have done this, or it should be, I should be here already. Or, and so when we get caught up in that, which to be honest, sometimes is kind of a societal imposed experience of what the success might look like or how our life should be, we experience grief. It's that disconnect of the picture we had in our mind, whether it be relationships, moving, transitioning, I even say rite of passage, sometimes I worked with people going to university who they needed to grieve the experience of growing up. Like, I'm no longer at home and I used to be taken care of and now I have to do everything. And I call it basically just transition. It's a time of transition. And grief can be quite transformative when we allow it to be rather than fight it. Now, the phases of grief. So originally, it's very interesting. Originally, the phases of grief were created for someone who found out they had a terminal illness. So it was, the research was, Dr. Kubler-Ross was like, okay, this is what I'm finding when they find out their diagnosis. These are the stages they go through, not in necessarily order, but these are the experiences maybe they have. And then they started realizing it's also of the family members who find out that person has that terminal illness. And then from there, it was counselors, psychologists, social workers, coaches saying, wait, no, a lot of people experience this in a variety of ways. And so these stages or phases really became how we talked about grief. You know, there's these now six phases or stages. And for me, I address that in the book. That's actually the second part of the book, is I talk about what the phases actually really look like and the experience of them and some tools to use when you feel yourself specifically, say you're just feeling really angry on a regular basis, you're going maybe through a period of that in your grief, what to do to start to help that energy that kind of wants to destroy or create. And then the third part, I address the fact that there are a whole lot of other experiences in the grief process. So one chapter is about humor and grief. And another chapter is about the power of and, how you can be like grateful and grieve. And that speaks to those people who've been told like, well, just be grateful everything worked out, or be grateful that you still have that kid, or be grateful that this person's still alive. And then I'm allowed to be grateful and also grieve. So it addresses that throughout the book, that there's also some other really prominent experiences that we have that don't really fall into a phase or stage, but are quite relevant. Now, for me, those phases and stages, again, are just general emotional groupings that we can go, oh, I must be going through this. Or for me, the bargaining stage is about anxiety and control. Like the feeling like, if I had done this, everything would have been different. Like, no. Or if I continue to do this, then this will happen or not happen. And it's just us trying to be like superheroes of our own lives in a way. And it's almost like little kids with capes on, like, I can change it. Maybe you don't need to. Maybe it's okay. So it's letting go of that anxiety, which is really hard. Most of us, especially women, we like to have a little bit of control over some things.
Oh, gosh, yes, we do. And two things really came to mind for me when you were talking. And I think one of them is that idea of holding to things. You can be profoundly sad and still find joy some days. Or you can, yeah, be in that loss and that grief, but also experience love. And I think sometimes for people, it may be part of it is coming from that sort of dichotomous thinking of the Western world, is that either or. You must be either or. You can't be both. You sort of can't have those both of those things held. And then I was thinking as well, and I know for women who've had breast cancer and maybe other types of cancer, is there is that pressure to be the grateful warrior, the grateful cancer patient. You got through this. And some people have encountered others saying, you got the good cancer, or you're still alive, and all of those things. And I think that it really takes away that person's, I think it silences people, because I think you're allowed to be really pissed off that this thing has happened and still be grateful. Yeah, I'm alive and I've still got my hands and feet and things. But you're allowed to feel really bloody angry that this thing has happened, and you don't have to be this sort of stoic cancer patient that is inspiring to everyone.
Completely. I call it grief shaming. And it's horrible. I've just finished a blog post and launched it today, online grief shaming. Why people think that's acceptable and okay. But it's exactly what you said. A lot of the time it's people make you feel ashamed or guilty for your grief process, because it really just makes them uncomfortable, because it makes them face their own and they don't want to do that. And I really think our whole world is shifting from this suck it up and move on mentality. And we're starting to go, no, that actually doesn't work. That leads to addiction and escapism and really unhealthy behaviors. And we need to change as a society. For women who go through the experience of breast cancer and are have all these little messages that they're told, like, oh, you're such a fighter and move on and stuff. It's, no, I'm going to ruminate and think about it over and over. I'm going to be so pissed off. I'm going to scream and cry. And you're just going to have to listen. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry. It's not about you. This isn't for you. It's our own process. And I think the more women who start to stand up and say, stop grief shaming me, and we call it that, people are kind of like, whoa, I'm not trying to shame you. Then what are you trying to do? I'm trying to give you strength. Well, how? By telling me to stop feeling and thinking what I am. And it's a cycle that, this is why I say back to, I think a lot of our grief in the world around success and things like that is caused by society. So a lot of the grief we experience isn't necessarily one had that, all of that negative outside influence impacting us, but here we are. And so we have to do the work to decondition those beliefs and step forward and say, no more shaming me for this. I'm angry. Or I'm going to cry and stay in bed. Leave me alone.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because as you've been talking, I was thinking, I don't know what it's like for men. I'm not a man, so I don't know this. But I was thinking, I'm 40, and so when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I'd been through a divorce. I had other things go on that were extremely painful and that I couldn't grieve openly about. And so when I got cancer and a lot of things have been delayed and all of that stuff, and even around fertility, it's just not a given for me that I'll be able to have a child. And there's, yeah, even though logically I can go, those are social constructs and I don't need to be a mum and all of this stuff, there is still part of me that thinks everyone I went through school with has more than one child, or they're this, that and the other. And that really resonates with me, that idea that there is this expectation. But when life doesn't turn out in the ways that you think it will, it can be very difficult to process that and be okay with where you are. And I know that part of your story is, yeah, those big losses or things not turning out. So do you want to share some of the things that happened or brought you to the place of really exploring and writing about grief?
The end of 2018, my mother died unexpectedly. And again, I'm living in Germany. She's in the United States. So that was one of those calls in the middle of the night you don't expect to receive. And then about 9 months later, I had my first miscarriage. We had our two daughters. We were trying for our third. And so, of course, you get the baby's up in heaven with your mother, or you get the, listen, you've got, just hold on to your two girls, just really enjoy them. And it was like, and I'm also going to be really angry and sad. And then 6 months or 5 months later from that, on Christmas Eve, we lost the second. And it was just like you stand up and the ocean wave crashes you again. And you're like, okay, I got this. I'm reeling up again. And I had to do a lot of reflection of my life. And I realized that I knew this feeling, this emptiness, this ache before. I felt this. And so I started tracking. I'm kind of a science brain where I was like, okay, where has this been before? And my parents divorced when I was a teenager. I really felt and experienced those things. And I was like, oh, that was a time. Wow, that was a time where life didn't happen the way I thought it would or should. And okay. And then I went back further and I grew up in a military family. So we moved every 2 to 3 years. Like the longest I lived in one place was the 4 years of university. And I was like, whoa, but I was still moving dormitories each year. So it still felt like normal in that sense. But I realized, wow, that had grief too, that constant moving and picking up and uprooting and trying to meet new people and fit in and all of these things. And then I went back to present day and like, wow, I moved to Germany and that was a grief process. When I go back to the States, I don't feel like I fit in there and I definitely don't fit in here. I smile too much for Germany. So I'm left in this space of feeling like an alien more than I already feel like. And that has grief because it's like, where do you belong? Because of losing my mom and having the two miscarriages, it made me do this life assessment where it's the same thing I do with clients. I have them do the sort of grief timeline to go, oh, I've been through grief before. Now, how did I handle it? Was it healthy? Was it not? What worked? What didn't? And you kind of get to assess all of these things. And as I was writing the book, I tell some of my story and I didn't always respond in healthy ways. Most times I didn't, until recently where I went, oh my gosh, I have little kids looking at me. So if I don't respond better, they're going to do it in the next generation and they're going to pass it on as well. And I was like, okay, it's time for me to really face the grief, get really comfortable with being uncomfortable. And it just made sense. Why not during a pandemic? We're all stuck at home anyways, right?
Oh my God. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, what else do you make TikTok? Oh gosh. Yeah. Oh yeah. I had a time like that as well. And that's exactly how I described it, where, so my marriage had ended. So this was in 2015-16, a really awful work experience. And I chose to leave and I was really devastated because I'd loved working for the company, but I ended up in a position where my boss was extraordinarily toxic and it impacted me. Then my marriage ended. And then as I must have been later in that year and I'd set myself up again and I'd made this decision that I was going to chase my dream to move to the UK because I have a British passport. And then something else happened that meant it just grounded me. It was such a huge loss that it just altered me. And so that trip didn't happen. And then I got cancer. It's just like, oh my. And I really, yeah, it's that sort of thing of, yeah, you get up once you go, okay, I can do this. Okay, I'll just get to the end of this year, and next year it's going to be different. And I sort of laugh about it because I just think, how's this fun? Like, right. Are you serious?
I love that. Here's two women who are beautifully broken. We're like mosaics of who we were. Yeah. And all you can do is laugh because it's like, what are you, if you cry or you laugh? I prefer the laughter because that feels a lot better. Endorphins are great.
This is fabulous. I guess it's a video that goes around YouTube sometimes and I always share it when it comes out. So it's a yoga class. I think it's the Grinch or someone is in it. And the yoga teacher says, and let out your breath. And they just scream. And everyone turns around and looks at him and he goes, I've got some issues. And I think,
yep, I understand that one too.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I think this is the thing that grief is really, and loss is so, can be so profoundly painful and transformative, because I don't think you can go through, like, losing your mum. You know, I've talked about this on the podcast before, especially those who have had parents that have had cancer and if they've passed away and things. But I think there is something, it's almost like a primal thing with your parents, especially your mum. And I guess it's that bond. And I think those losses or a pregnancy loss is really hard to describe what that pain feels like. But I know for me, yeah, I feel it here, like in my chest. People who are listening, I'm pointing in that solar plexus where it's like you're being winded. It's just that really intense feeling. And I don't know how else to describe it. And I know when I've been in that place, when, you know, these big things have happened, it can often feel like, oh my God, how am I going to get through this? Because when I got cancer, I thought, I don't think I can cope with this.
You're like, you just went through like bam, bam, bam of the ocean waves and then you get that. Yeah.
So did you get to that point too? Did you get to the point where you thought, no, I just like, I can't achieve this. Not today. Thanks.
Many times. Mm. And what helped is me, and I don't know if this being a therapist inherently just was like, okay, I need to say what I need, but just telling my husband, I really need you to take the kids for the weekend and give me a weekend break. And so I can just be moody or whatever it needs to be. Like, I just need the space to grieve. And the first miscarriage actually happened with, I was going to go for 10 days to the States to visit my family to have time with them alone to grieve the loss of my mom. So this was the summer after she died in October, and it's the summer after. And then the miscarriage happened while I was there. So divinely that happened where I needed to be. My kids weren't needing mommy, where I can't be with them. I had people, my family taking care of me. I was at my grandparents' house that was just home, completely felt like home. And it felt like my mother's presence was there through the whole thing. So it was solely me not allowing the feeling of guilt or shame and going, I just need space. I need time. I'm going to take my journal and a pen. My husband got used to it. I'm going to go journal. And he even said the other day, do you still have grief work to do? Like, you've done so much grief work. I don't think I've known anybody to do as much work as you. And you still have things you're grieving? I'm like, babe, this is what grief work is about. You just feel it. And it, like, grief integrates into who you are. And there's times where I get triggered, and it's not grief work like, oh man, now I need to go see a counselor and share all the things. It's more like these moments where, oh, I need to write about that, or I just need to go cry, or I need to take a walk and have 20 minutes by myself. It's not always these long periods of time. So when I start to feel it, I know, okay, this is what I know my toolkit, this is what I need to do. And my husband's on board, and even my kids, they kind of know, like, mom's going to go, okay, mom. And then 10 minutes later, I'm hungry. So it's never very long. But that saved me, was just being able to say what I needed. And it takes a lot, because honestly, we are told that there's a problem if you need space. And like, clearly there's issues. Like, you need to go and speak to someone. And I had a therapist as well. As a therapist, we need therapists too. But there's just also times where you just need to say, I can't be responsible for everybody in the world right now. I can't take care of these things or whatever. Like, I need to just be able to mope and sit, lay in bed. And so how can we make that happen? How can this occur and everybody still function without me feeling like I'm doing something wrong?
I think that's such a good point to make, because I know lots of my listeners are mum or the sort of female figure in the family. Because, you know, we have three animals and two of them young dogs, which are constantly needing attention. And I feel that sometimes, I know they're not human children, but it's that thing of sometimes you just can't cope with the needing, some people needing something from you. And I recently had this experience where a young man that I knew a few years ago when I did a lot of boxing, he died very suddenly in a very tragic incident where he was, they call them coward punches, and he was punched basically in the back of the head and died. And I felt really embarrassed, ashamed at the time, because it really affected me. I'm thinking about it now, it makes me really sad, because he was such a beautiful human being, and knowing the grief that his family would feel. But then I think what it did, it just stirred in me some of my grief. And so what I did differently was I allowed myself just to cry. So anytime I saw his name come up through Facebook feeds, I would cry, or because it made the news here and things. And I just let it. I just let myself really cry, because I find it hard to cry. I find it hard to let myself feel those intense things. And then I talked to someone that also knew him, and just express that sadness, because it was tragic. And I think when you have been through profound loss, watching someone else's profound loss, and if you're an empathetic person like I am that feels the world, it can really bring that stuff out. And I think that's such an important thing to remind people, is that you're allowed to give yourself space to get into bed, hide under the cover, and just grieve and cry and watch cat videos if you need to.
Right. And be angry and yell and all of it. Yeah. Yes. I think the key things when we grieve is that we have to be really mindful that we don't do things that hurt us permanently, that hurt others or relationships firmly. Sometimes we say things, but as long as we come back, I'm so sorry. Speaking with a grief lens right now. Or I always say it, like, making sure we don't escape our lives, the midlife crisis, and I'm gone. That's grief, honestly. This is not the life I expected to have. This is not where I was supposed to be. This is not how I was told this was supposed to go. And it's just grief work that is uncomfortable. So the person jets and escapism happens. So yeah, creating that space, allowing yourself the freedom to cry, to talk about all of those things, I think those are essential. Each of us has our own toolkit. It's about pulling it out and saying, okay, what works, what doesn't in these certain situations.
That's such a good point, because I think this is really relevant for anyone who is in the cancer community, because unfortunately, when you join support groups or you meet other people going through it, you inevitably will meet people who will get secondary cancer and die. And I know that people don't like talking about the fact that cancer can lead to death. And I had this experience actually a week or so ago where a woman who I've never met this person in real life, but when I went through my cancer treatment and things in 2018, she was quite active on a Facebook support group. And I just remember her, she would always call it, like, if you posted, she'd always have really kind and gentle things to say. And she is in her final stages because it came back. And I felt very sad about that. She's young, she has young kids and all of those things. Yeah. This long-winded story is that I wasn't comfortable in it. I wasn't comfortable in my grief. And so when my partner came home, I was an absolute shithead. And I had to stop and I had to say, I'm actually really sad because this happened. I'm really sorry. But yeah, so that, and just having to stop and go, no, you've been a shit. And it's because you're comfortable in your feelings and you're not letting it out. And your dear is now copping it. And just saying those words out loud, I'm really sad that this person is dying, just takes that heaviness off.
Completely. I mean, it's like holding in tears, to finally you just let them out. And then you're just like, oh, why did I hold this in? It's interesting you're saying that, you know, people don't like to talk about the fact that cancer can lead to death. There's two constants in life, change and death. So we got to get used to and comfortable with the fact that life will always be changing and death will always happen. It's that life cycle, it's a circle of life. There's movies, there's all these things that remind us about this. And yet it's something we want to fight and stay away from and act like no. And I think that's another way that our cultures and our society have really done this wrong. And it's the world of marketing and sales. You want to have this great life and you want it to be this long and all of these things, and understandably, but it's almost this forced, this is how it should look. And so when my mother was 57, when she died, everybody's like, it was too young. And yeah, there's the side, but she was going to die at any age it was going to be. So who am I to say that was really too young? Maybe that was really supposed to be her time. That's a whole different spiritual discussion. But the reality is that one component of grief when it comes to loss or knowing a loss is coming is just getting comfortable with loss and the concept of it. I've had many discussions in the last year about death because of what all's going on in the world. And I'm not jaded necessarily because of my mom's death, but I'm way more realistic that people die. And it doesn't make sense to us all the time, but that is, you know, that's life. We always said, I want to live life to the fullest. I'm just all in. Okay, so that means you're going to get all of life. And it's positive and it's negative and it's quote good or bad. And it's all of it, ugly, messy, beautiful, laughter, everything. So when you say you're all in, I want to experience all of life. Okay, then you will. And we all are. But recognize that means the whole gambit and the whole cycle. Yeah.
I think it's a really good point to make about the past year. And this is something that I was really keen to ask you about, because I've heard people use the term collective grief around COVID. And I think especially in countries where there has been the experience of like mass death, like it just is really difficult to comprehend, I think, because we have been very lucky in New Zealand. We have had some deaths, but the response from our government has meant that we've minimised that stuff. But then I think there's all that other stuff that has gone on, that people have lost jobs. Yeah, life hasn't gone the way it was meant to, so many factors. And I don't know what it's like anywhere else. But here, I feel like people are almost in denial about this huge event that we're all still going through, and that there is that collective grief and that the world has shifted in some way. But no one's acknowledging this. No one is going, yeah, man, this is really intense and maybe we need to change. Maybe things need to shift up. What have your thoughts been if you've observed the world going through this?
So you shared you are an empath, and I as well. So what I soak up is everyone's grief. The curse of doing this work is the way I describe like the collective energy to people is it's like when you walk into a room and a couple or two people have had an argument, and the argument is done, and maybe they're not even looking at each other, but you feel like the tension in the room. You could cut it with a knife. There's just, what is this? amplify that with the whole world has experienced these intense, difficult emotions, and some have outlets and some don't. And so you're just walking through life and you're going to the store and you're, you know, wherever you are, and you're feeling it. Or if you're stuck inside, you're going on social media probably, and you're feeling it because everyone's like writing it with their intensity and they're making their videos and all these things. And so what happens is some of us can remain in denial because we're in that bubble or whatever. There is that. I think it's beautiful that there are cities that have been able to keep that. Okay, we've got this. Everything's okay. There is this semblance of control. But when you then watch the news and you see what's going on in the rest of the world, you go, oh, wow, like this is huge. So it is really hard, I think, for those of us who pick up on people's emotions and energies really easily to understand how others don't realize, wow, as a collective, there's a whole lot going on right now. There's a whole lot. And as an American, the last 12 years in the United States have been quite an emotional roller coaster, politically, economically, even longer than 12 years. But in general, so I'm very familiar with that feeling of like, ooh, everybody's on edge. I also come from an area of the United States where like American football is like super intense. And so there's like people on separate teams, even if you go to church, who's on what side, and you're like, just don't talk to them that day. So that I know that feeling of, we just don't talk about it. We just don't talk about it. But this is a situation in which the world is like, we have to talk about it. Oh my gosh, everything, all this stuff is happening. People are dying. There's freedom of choice being taken away. But then there's also, we don't like that people have that freedom of choice. And so it's all of these things. And this separation of people is happening. People are dichotomy is occurring. And it's causing more grief and more pain. Because what do we need to be doing right now is to be loving on each other and nurturing each other. And I don't mean like contact face to face, but hey, are you okay? How are you doing? What's going on in your world? And how can I be there for you? And let me share what's going on in my world. And here's how you can help me. And that our brains, our bodies need. And we're dividing that because of this virus, this pandemic. And honestly, I think it's largely how media and politics are handling it that are reinforcing this group kind of thing. There's us against them and them against us. And it's really unhealthy. You would think after like history in many different countries, in fact, all the countries, that this would be something like we'd all go, oh, this doesn't work. We've seen how the outcome, we know the end of this movie. It doesn't work if we keep going this way. But no, for some reason, we're creatures of habit, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I was thinking, because we actually, before we hit record, we were joking about, I guess I consider myself an elder millennial or on the cusp of Gen X, because I'm right at the end of 1980. So I feel like I've got a foot slightly in Gen X. There is that fantastic TikTok or video that has that voiceover that our generation, yeah, we have experienced. We watched 9/11 happen live on TV. I still remember that day so clearly. Like, I can remember where I was. I can remember watching it all unfold, like not being able to move. And then there was the great financial crash. And even here in New Zealand, like, I know that it was probably worse in the States. In New Zealand at the time, I lost 2 jobs in 6 months. My partner at the time lost his job. So we all have gone through these things. And then even in New Zealand in the past decade, we've had a major earthquake. We've had a terrorist attack. As I think our generation, there have been so many things that have happened. And it is no wonder we're all anxious and depressed. No one feels any. It's really interesting the way that we've all gone, oh, look, another event.
Add that one to the list, honey. Write that one down.
Yeah, it's crazy. Oh, it's been so great to talk to you, Katie. And if people have been listening or resonating, where can we find you on social media? And will your book be available on places like Amazon and those sorts of things?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. I'm at katie.russler, and that's just R-O-S-L-E-R. You'll see in the show notes, I have an umlaut over the O, but on social media, that's a little bit harder to do. On Facebook, my business page is Growing Through Hidden Grief. And my website is katerussler.com. And the book, yes, as of August 9th, that will pre-order on Amazon will be available, but it will be on Amazon and a variety of other areas as well, or other platforms. So, and the hope is, it will definitely be an ebook and paperback, but I'm hoping to get the audio done in time as well, because I know a lot of people like to listen to the book rather than have it in, you know, it's just easy. I'm on my walk or whatever to listen to the book. So that's my goal as well. And you can find the website for the book. It's called thenewfaceofgrief.com.
Oh, that's great. I'll put all of that information in the show notes so people can find you easily. Well, thank you so much. It is, yeah, it's been really great to talk. And I think this is a topic that I just will happily talk about. I think people should be able to grieve in the way that they want. And the more we can let people know that they can be a mess, the better.
Go be a mess. Embrace your messiness.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word. I'm looking for your action.
got time, but I don't mind. Just wanna rock you, girl. I'll have whatever you have. Come on, let's give it a whirl. See, I've been watching you. I like the way you move. So go ahead, girl, just do that ass shaking thing you do.
So you grab the girls and you grab a couple more. All can meet me in the middle of a floor. Set the air, it's thick, it's smelling right.
A hit when the Neptune's and the doggy dog finna spit. You know he's in tune with the season. Come here, baby, tell me why you leaving. Tell me if it's weed that you need, if you wanna breathe. I got the best weed by the seas. Ain't nobody tripping, VIP they can't get in. If something go wrong, then you know we get to gripping.
Don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes,
Now you step in with a G from Los Angeles, where the helicopters got cameras, just to get a glimpse of our chucks and our khakis and our bouncing car. You with your friend, right?
Yeah.
She ain't trying to bring over no men, right?
No.
She ain't gotta be in the distance. She can get high all in an instant.
I see you, but don't fuck with me. Why you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes, messing with the guys. Why you telling me this is a sign?
Mamacita, have you ever flown on G5 from London to a Ibiza? You gotta have cake till you'll have Sundays with your key times. You'll see Venus and Serena in the Wimbledon arena. And I
think Uncle Charlie, you're free.
Chicken don't got me foolish. Don't know what you're doing. Don't know what you lost until she's gone. She had a pretty face. Drove you wild. But you ain't got that Snoop Doggy Dogg style.
Unless you know what I see, you but don't fuck with me. Why you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes, messing with the guys. Why you telling me this is a sign?
Oh. Don't think about it, boy, leave her alone. Nigga, you ain't no king.
Yo traigo para ti algo excitante, mi jarabe te levanta de la tumba, es un jaleo pa' que siempre estés adelante, un poquito de mela, sazón y rumba, es un pasito que te voy a enseñar, un menesto que sé que te gustará, y cuando aprendas a bailarlo con sabor, te aseguro que este ritmo gozará. puede vacilar. Se va donde quiera que usted vaya. Se va a mi ritmo, vas a encontrar. Se baila así, con la bomba y la plena. Se goza más, yo me pongo a vacilar. Se baila así, y el ritmo de candela. Se goza más, candela te va a quemar. Se baila así, y que se puede, se puede. Se goza más, donde quiera que usted va a gozar. Se puede vacilar. Es que me soy el principal. Brinque, y que se puede vacilar.
Hey, I've got this brutal challenge waiting on me. I'm gonna use my power.